Welcome to Tuned In with Mike Johnson, a public service of Mount Wilson FM Broadcasters and Global Jazz Incorporated. Now, here's Mike.
Thank you, Al Verde, and good morning, everybody. Welcome to Tuned In from Mount Wilson FM Broadcasters and Global Jazz Incorporated. This morning, our topic is prostate cancer. There have been a couple of high-profile prostate cases in the news in recent days, so we'll talk about them. And our guest this morning is Dr. Andrew Behesnilian, and he is a urologist with Optum located in Northridge. Doctor, good morning.
Mike, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for being with us. Now, everyone's heard, I think most people have heard about prostate cancer, but I don't know if everybody actually understands what the prostate is. So just to, as the beginning point here for everybody who may not know, what is the prostate?
Yeah, that's the very, very common question that I get a lot. Now, a lot of people talk about the prostate, but especially as you get older, but most people don't know exactly what the prostate is or what it does. And to be honest with you, Mike, I didn't know myself until probably second year medical school. It's not something that most people like keep in their mind and think about all the time. But now that I'm a doctor and I'm a urologist, I'm intricately like aware of the prostate and all the intricacies of it. So the prostate is a walnut-sized organ that's located deep in the pelvis of male bodies, just below the bladder. Its main job is to produce a fluid that mixes with sperm to create semen. So it's a reproductive organ, and it doesn't really do all that much else. And as men get older, you tend to hear about issues with the prostate because of its location. So as it enlarges, it tends to kink on the tube and cause urinary problems. Additionally, the prostate we hear about a lot, just like we've heard in the news recently, that the prostate has a tendency to develop cancer. So that's where I come in as a urologist.
Sure, yeah, and by all means, it's the sort of thing where, again, people hear about it in passing, but to ask you these questions, we ask the questions here that people may not know to ask or people might be shy to ask, and that's exactly the purpose of this program this morning. So, Doctor, again, you sort of touched on it a little bit there, but let's go into a little bit more detail. Signs and symptoms of prostate problems. Let's go a little bit deeper on that.
Yeah, of course. So when we're talking about prostate problems, anytime we think of the prostate, we have to break it down into non-cancerous prostate problems and cancerous prostate problems. So the prostate tends to cause a lot of problems. But when we talk about non-cancerous prostate problems, we're talking about BPH, or benign prostatic hyperplasia. And that's actually what King Charles went in for a couple weeks ago. He went in for a treatment for BPH. BPH is basically a non-cancerous enlargement of the prostate. The prostate tends to grow, is one of the few organs that tends to grow throughout a man's life. It doesn't stop growing. And as I had mentioned before, the prostate gland, as it grows, can actually pinch off the urethra, leading to these urinary problems. And presumably, King Charles must have had these types of issues to have to undergo this procedure. When we're talking about other prostate problems, we start thinking about prostate cancer. Now, prostate cancer is, on a different spectrum. You actually don't generally have symptoms of prostate cancer. Prostate cancer, is one of the most common causes of, cancer in men in the United States and cancer death of men in the United States. But it's one of those unfortunate things where you don't really notice it when it's in the stage where you can actually cure it. So signs and symptoms of prostate problems, for non-cancerous prostate problems, you get problems urinating. For cancerous prostate problems, you don't tend to notice anything. So those are the signs and symptoms.
And I think you're touching on something there that I was gonna, actually made me think. Not all prostate problems are directly cancerous, then, are they?
Yeah. So very, very common. I get men coming into the office saying, "Doc, I'm waking up three times at night," and it's my job as a urologist to kind of to explain to them, "Hey, prostate cancer typically doesn't do that. You don't really develop symptoms like that." My first thought is going to be, you have an enlarged prostate. As you get older, your prostate grows. Millions of men have problems with their prostate just from the benign, non-cancerous enlargement.
So when the prostate is enlarged, what's the basic treatment, or is there a set idea of what to do to fix that?
Yeah. So when the prostate is enlarged, we have a couple things we do as urologists. So first, first off, when you think of prostate enlargement, people get really fixated on the size of the prostate. They say, "Doc, how big is my prostate? Is it apple? Is it grapefruit? Is it this and that?" It doesn't actually matter the size of your prostate. What matters is the symptoms you have. Now there are plenty of men out there that I treat who have normal-sized prostates who actually have a lot of urinary problems from the inside of the prostate being narrow, And I have patients who have grapefruit-sized prostates who have zero urinating problems whatsoever. So we don't treat prostate enlargement. We treat symptoms of prostate enlargement. So treatment of the symptoms being things like frequent urination, weak stream, waking up more than once or twice at night, having to rush to the bathroom, those are all symptoms of an enlarged prostate. The first thing we do is we always try to start from easy and then go up the ladder. So easy or relatively easy is trying to limit things like caffeine, spicy foods, carbonated beverages, and trying to limit fluids in the evenings. That's number one to treat the symptoms. If that works, great. If that doesn't work, we go to step two, and that's medication. Now, there are plenty of different medications that can either shrink the prostate to open up that urethra or relax the prostate to allow urine to pass through it easier. There's a couple of different medicines there.
Well, doctor, as you talk about these things, and definitely, we're trying to make sure that people are aware and not shy to talk about these things, because I think that's probably the beginning spot, isn't it? I mean, when you have people in your office, is that sort of like just breaking open a nut and trying to get them to talk about what's going on? Or do people just generally open up and say, this is what's happening to me?
Yeah, so usually older men have been dealing with this for a while. It's been on their mind. And you know, it might be different with if I was not a urologist.
Mm-hmm.
If I was a primary doctor, they might be like, oh, I don't know if she or he wants to hear about it. When you come to me, they're ready to go because I'm a urologist. Okay. You know, below the belt is my specialty, so they're usually pretty open. It can be a little embarrassing if the prostate enlargement has gotten to the point where they're starting to leak urine and having to wear pads and diapers mm-hmm. and stuff like that. Then it becomes a little more of a sensitive issue, but that's what I'm here for, to help them get out of the pads and the diapers and all that kind of stuff.
My guest is Dr. Andrew Behesnelian, and he is a urologist with Optum located in Northridge. This is Tuned In for Mount Wilson FM Broadcasters and Global Jazz Incorporated, and we're speaking this morning about prostate health because there have been a couple of high-profile people in the news who have announced that they have had situations with their prostate, King Charles, as the doctor referenced. And now I'm going to reference here Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin. I don't know if you have all the particulars, obviously, for each specific case, but are there similarities or are there differences between what's happening to Defense Secretary Austin versus King Charles?
Yeah, Lloyd Austin actually said that he went in for a prostatectomy. So we know he had prostate cancer. And he went in to have his prostate surgically removed. Now, unfortunately, he's developed a couple of complications and has been in and out of the hospital for urinary infections, and we don't know exactly what else. This is different than King Charles. So Lloyd Austin, prostate cancer, and that's the cancer category for prostate, and King Charles was the benign category. He went in for treatment of an enlarged prostate. He presumably had a procedure. If the medication failed and he's still having trouble urinating, you end up having a procedure like he did. And to throw something in there, they ended up discovering some other cancer they say was not prostate cancer.
Hmm.
Now, it's very common during prostate surgery for benign enlarged prostate, not very common, but it happens where you can discover prostate cancer that wasn't there before. And that's what everyone initially thought, So it turns out that they discovered some other cancer, and saying what it is just pure speculation.
Sure. As far as age is concerned, is there a timeline where men begin to develop these issues, or can they start rather young? How does that work?
Yeah. So there's a timeline. So prostate problems are problems for older men. And when I say older, it means like young older men. And I consider young older men starting in their 50s.
Okay.
Men in their 50s can start having enlarged prostate issues, sometimes a little bit sooner, but usually 50s and on. And as all prostate problems are age-related, as you get older, your risk of prostate cancer goes up. That's actually the number one risk for prostate cancer is age. And your risk of benign prostate enlargement and prostate and urinating problems goes up with age as well. So I would say 50 is where you start having the issues. 50 is where we start recommending screening for prostate cancer for most average risk men.
What percentage of men, and I know it's probably, you may not have the exact number, but in a ballpark way, what percentage of men will experience issues with their prostate?
So issues with the prostate. Now, I do know a statistic that 14 million men in America have symptoms of an enlarged prostate.
Okay.
So a lot of men have prostate problems. in terms of prostate cancer, it's actually quite a high number. One out of every 100 American men, 13 will get prostate cancer during their lifetime. This is from the CDC website. And 2.5% of those men, those 100 men, will die of prostate cancer. So prostate cancer is very common.
Making sure that people are checking themselves, of course. Is there a protocol, something that people should just kind of in general look for at home?
Yeah. So in terms for prostate cancer, mm-hmm. in terms of looking for yourself at home, as I had said before, there are no real symptoms of prostate cancer, so mm-hmm. you're not going to know. That's what's kind of scary about it, and that's what's prompted people to try to develop a screening tool for prostate cancer. The only half-decent test we have to screen for prostate cancer on a population basis, meaning everyone gets tested, is called the PSA, or prostate-specific antigen. Now, PSA is a blood test that you can get just drawn with your routine labs that measures a protein produced by the prostate, and it's the most commonly used prostate cancer screening tool in the world. The unfortunate problem with PSA is it's not really a test for prostate cancer. The PSA is produced by the prostate, so things like you can have elevated levels even without prostate cancer. Things like enlarged prostate infections, they can all, you know, flag abnormal on your test and create all sorts of anxiety. The only definitive way to determine whether you have prostate cancer is to do something called a prostate biopsy, and that's a procedure we do to take samples of the prostate.
Do you generally recommend that for most men, say over 65, or how often do you do the biopsy?
Yeah, so the biopsy is kind of it's uncomfortable, it's mildly invasive, so we don't biopsy anybody. There has to be a relatively good reason to do the biopsy. But in terms of screening with PSA, we recommend that men start getting screened at age 50 for average risk males. And there are a few things that raise your risk of having prostate cancer. And if you're in that category of elevated risk for prostate cancer, we recommend you get screened starting at age 40 to 45, probably.
What are some of the factors?
Yeah. So family history is a big one. If you have relatives with prostate cancer, it raises your risk for prostate cancer, especially if the prostate cancer was early, like before 65. And African-American males actually have a higher rate of prostate cancer and twice the chance of dying from prostate cancer than non-African-American males. So we recommend screening them starting age 40 to 45.
Why is that?
We don't know. Hmm. We don't know.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Scary. Yep. But the reality is, of course, that if you just follow, as the doctor's talking about here, as you know, when there are family history things and there are other things that are important factors, you have to pay attention to yourself, don't you, doctor?
That's true. And you gotta, you know, it's one of those things where you kind of have to go to the doctor and you gotta listen to your doctor sometimes.
Yeah. My guest is Dr. Andrew Behesnelian, and he is a urologist with Optum, located in Northridge. This is Tuned In for Mount Wilson FM Broadcasters and Global Jazz Incorporated. So, doctor, obviously there have to be other factors. I'm going to guess, you know, the obesity factor that is so prevalent now within this country. And,
yeah.
And you mentioned earlier also about, you know, soft drinks and that sort of thing. If there was one thing you could tell everybody listening this morning to stop, to try to at least start down the road to doing the right thing for their prostate, what would it be?
Yeah, so there is some evidence that diet has an effect. It's not one of those 100%. I promise you, if you eat this way, you're not going to develop prostate cancer. I can't give you that.
Sure.
But we know that there's some evidence that suggests that eating more fruits and this is all the stuff that doctors say all the time,
mm-hmm.
and it's not going to be unique for prostate cancer, unfortunately. But there are studies that show that diets high in fruits and vegetables, if you eat lots of fruits and vegetables or you're vegetarian, your risk of prostate cancer is less. If you eat more healthy fats, like fish oil, nuts, seeds, avocados, your risk of prostate cancer is less. If you eat too much red meat or high-fat dairy, your risk of prostate cancer is probably more. And, it's healthy to maintain a health. It's important to maintain a healthy weight. Your risk of all cancers essentially go up if you're overweight. And same with prostate cancer.
Doubling back just for a moment. Now, again, we referenced earlier that King Charles had his situation and Defense Secretary Austin had his situation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as King Charles was, I would dare say a little bit more open about what he was experiencing versus Secretary Austin,
Mm-hmm.
Do you think on some level, and this may be unfair to ask, but I'll ask it anyway, did maybe Secretary Austin just sort of misinterpret how serious the situation was? Is that, and maybe that's why he tried to, as it appears, keep it quiet?
Probably. You know, prostate cancer is tough, and mm-hmm. we haven't talked about it. But when I mentioned where the prostate is, you can imagine how difficult prostate cancer is to treat based on the location. The prostate is deep in the pelvis, and what I didn't mention is that the prostate is intimately involved in continence, urinary continence. So any treatment for prostate cancer, it's going to impact your urinary continence to some degree. Not always, doesn't mean you're going to be incontinent, but it tends to make people less open about being treated for prostate cancer. So that may have played a role in him keeping things under wrap.
In this day and age, of course, you know, where people are now more open about their medical situations than they have been in the past. I'm going to ask you now, doctor, and obviously I won't ask you to divulge patient, doctor, you know, confidences, of course. Do most men understand what's happening to them?
In terms of prostate cancer?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's tough. It's hard to understand something that you don't feel at all.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Secretary Austin probably had no symptoms of prostate cancer. My guess is that he got screened by, this is all speculation, but
sure.
My guess is he had no symptoms because most men don't. If you have symptoms, it means you're probably, you know, it's probably advanced and you're probably not a candidate. So he probably had localized cancer, was a candidate for surgery, had surgery. I'm sorry, what was your question?
Well, I'm just sort of leaning down the idea about if the people in your office, when you tell them they're having prostate issues, be it cancer or just enlarged, whether they really understand what that involves for them.
No, it's very hard to do, and it's my job as a urologist and a physician to sit down and explain everything to them, you know, from as much as I can. And it requires a good amount. Prostate cancer requires a lot of face-to-face time with the urologist because you come in saying, I feel nothing, and you leave me telling you have cancer, even though you feel nothing. So it's hard to understand, and it requires a lot of counseling.
I would imagine most men who are told this are scared to death.
They are, and it's my, you know, it's my job to kind of reassure them. You know, what's interesting, we haven't touched on this yet, but in terms of treatment for prostate cancer, now, Secretary Austin had a radical prostatectomy, meaning it's one of the treatments for prostate cancer with a curative intent, meaning you're trying to cure the cancer by removing the prostate. So that's option one is surgery. Option two, which would have been an option, is radiation, where you use high energy beams of radiation to kill cancer cells in the pelvis.
Are one of those treatments more effective than the other, or does that just depend on the case?
Yeah. So in terms of treatment for prostate cancer, radiation, surgery are all generally we consider equivalent at curing prostate cancer.
Okay.
There's not one that's better than the other. They both have different side effects. Prostate surgery is a surgery, so it requires going into the belly, it requires stay in the hospital, and has all the inherent risks on a major operation. It takes about 2-4 hours. And that surgery, which we believe that Secretary Austin had, involves, you know, cutting out the prostate completely and sewing together the bladder and the urethra and taking out the prostate. You don't need the prostate if you're not trying to have kids anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the entire surgery. The issue, as I had mentioned before, is that it can impact, it is a major surgery, number one, relatively safe, generally just one night in the hospital, but it can impact continence. So you have to balance that. So that's option one. And then you radiation is another option for treatment of prostate cancer. Radiation is nice because nobody really touches you. You lay down and it's, you know, if it's external beam from the outside, they cook your prostate from the outside without touching you. It's a relatively long course, 6 to 8 weeks. You generally don't feel anything. You can have some mild side effects in the beginning of fatigue and frequent urination and frequent stools and that kind of stuff, but it's generally easier, so to speak, than prostate removal because you don't really have to do a major operation. The issue with radiation, however, is that because you're going through the belly, you end up the other organs tend to get a little bit of damage as well. So the issues from radiation tend to happen further down the line, like 5-10 years down the line, you can have, you know, issues with your bladder. So generally, when we're thinking about giving patients options for treatment of prostate cancer, when we present these two options, I generally will say surgery is reserved for the younger, healthier guys, meaning like under 70 or under 75, and radiation is better for older guys or sicker guys who have heart problems, that kind of stuff, because it's safer.
My guest is Dr. Andrew Behesnelian. This is Tuned In for Mount Wilson FM Broadcasters and Global Jazz Incorporated. Dr. Behesnelian practices urology, and he earned his medical degree from the David Geffen School of Medicine of UCLA. He completed his internship and residency there as well. Doctor, especially here in California, of course, there are so many people who have a what we'll call the outdoor lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that one of the problems I'm sure you hear from anybody who is going to have to experience either the surgery or the radiation is, you know, they still want to live their life. They still want to have all the fun that you want to have in this life. Does the idea of surgery and or radiation kind of scare some people off?
Scares everybody.
Yeah,
I don't know if there's a single person out there who I've diagnosed with prostate cancer who has not been scared to some degree. That's completely normal. It's
sure.
Completely, you know, part of being human. You know, with PSA screening, with all the available you know tools that we have, hopefully we can catch it early, and hopefully we can treat it with one of these options. There is one thing I'd like to mention. I think what I was talking about before is talking about active surveillance.
Okay.
And active surveillance is a big topic on prostate cancer, and I want your listeners to hear this as well. We're talking about cancer, and it scares a lot of people.
Sure.
Prostate cancer is a little different than all the other cancers. Prostate cancer, number one, is very slow. It is dangerous, but it's very slow, and it comes in different levels of aggressiveness. Now, prostate cancer comes either low risk, intermediate risk, or high risk. Now, unlike most other cancers, lung cancer, colon cancer, when you have a low-risk, non-aggressive prostate cancer, most men are great candidates for what we call active surveillance or just watching it. So it's one of the few times that a doctor will tell a patient, you have cancer, but I'm not going to do anything about it right now. So very common, almost all patients with low-risk prostate cancer, we recommend watching it. That doesn't mean I diagnose you with cancer and you drive off and I don't see you again. What it means is we monitor you with blood tests, exams, and serial and repeat biopsies every now and then to monitor for cancer progression, meaning we want to make sure it stays sleepy and stays non-aggressive. And as long as it does that, you can potentially go the rest of your life having prostate cancer and not needing a single intervention, treatment, surgery, anything. That's called active surveillance.
Wow. Wow, that's amazing. Logically, you think, well, it's cancer, you have to get rid of it. But what you're saying is that's not always the case.
Nope, and this is a change in the shift in the way of thinking. It started in the late 90s, but it's become more popular in the last 10 years or so. Active surveillance for low-risk prostate cancer is basically gone to the point where it's standard of care now for low-risk prostate cancer. So I see a lot of patients, I diagnose them with cancer, but I say good news, bad news. You know, bad news, you have prostate cancer. Good news is I'm not too worried about it. Let's keep an eye on it. Let's keep a close eye on you. And if anything changes and it becomes aggressive or something changes, we'll treat you. The reason we do this is because, as I've mentioned before, both the most common treatments for prostate cancer have side effects. Like, imagine if, your prostate cancer really wasn't going to do anything because it's very, you know, non-aggressive, sleepy, and I went and I took you for a major operation like Secretary Austin, and, you know, he's had complications from it. He's been in the hospital now twice, urinary infection, and for whatever reason. So we don't want to treat you because of the location in the pelvis. You're prone to, you know, complications, side effects. So that's why we developed, or not we, but that's why urologists everywhere developed active surveillance.
So, doctor, in the years you've been practicing, I mean, men are men. Obviously, we all think alike on some level.
Mm-hmm.
But do you see more people who are maybe a little bit more open about what's happening to them and how it's affecting them, maybe versus when you first were starting to practice?
Yeah, over the last decade or so, I've noticed that, you know, people are talking more about prostate cancer. They're talking more about screening, and they're talking a lot more about their prostates, which is great because I love talking about the prostate. So. It's been a change, and what we see in the news, people talking about King Charles and Secretary Austin, this is all, you know, doing everyone, all men, a favor, because it's bringing, you know, into the spotlight men's health and men's prostate.
And again, because it has been the sort of thing where sometimes people are shy to talk about it, having people like King Charles and Secretary Austin out in the open, right on the top of the news, talking about what's happening to them, do you think it's kind of opening up the eyes of some other folks that are maybe thinking, oh wait a second, there is something going on with me, isn't there?
Well, 100%. This, you know, the news is going to at least save a couple lives.
Yeah.
I'm sure. Somebody who is out there, who is not thinking about the PSA test or their prostate, is going to go to their doctor and say, "Hey, I heard this urologist on the radio talking to Mike, and I should probably get my prostate checked."
Dr. Andrew Bendis-Neelian, thank you very much for being with us this morning.
My pleasure.
Thank you, doctor. That's Dr. Andrew Bendis-Neelian. He is a urologist with Optum, located in Northridge, and as we say, it's your body. I mean, if you realize something is not quite right and the things that the doctor are talking about are affecting you, don't wait. Make that call today and get yourself checked out. My name is Mike Johnson. Thanks for listening to Tuned In.